everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abomination of desolation right after this. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like the flood are strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, listen to this. Did you know that the sun is shrinking? Well, a Newswire report made this surprising statement. It said, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per 1,000 years. If the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. If we went back 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth, 93 million miles in diameter. That would be the size of the sun. Now, as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. All right, now what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Didn't they tell us that that was 65 million years ago? 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs died out. 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. Hey, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie. And that's just what it is, a lie. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the label of science. And that's just one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a treatise by a fellow by the name of R. Wright. Not a very prestigious name, R. Wright. You'd think he'd be Robert D. Wright, Ph.D., you know, or something with letters after his name. He doesn't have any letters after his name. He can't know very much. He can't be very smart. All the smart people have been to college and they've got letters. But this guy came up with a pretty unique methodology for code pleading out Scripture. Now, those of us that are involved in law know how to do that. It's called code pleading. This fellow took an obscure prophecy called the Abomination of Desolation. It's only mentioned 5 times in Scripture. But it's a pretty pivotal prophecy, because when this event transpires, you can expect the second coming. And there's a time frame, 1,290 days and then 1,335 days. In order to do this, he came up and used the scientific principles. He said, let's come up with a model, and let's put our input into the model and see if it makes any sense, and see if it bears out in history. So in chapter 5, we're taking a look at Islam. Islam, and the Dome of the Rock. He says Islam is not an enigmatic religion. Let me try that one again. Islam is not an enigmatic religion. It isn't hard to be understood, I guess, is what we're trying to get at. It only appears that way to outsiders who themselves are part of a culture that does not condone deception. When actions are considered, the actions of Islam are very much in accordance with the teachings of the Quran and the Hadiths. Now, at the same time, however, it also must be recognized that allowing the end to justify the means permits Islam to engage in what the biblical God of Abraham calls sin. And in doing that, it implicates the Quranic Allah in sin, and sin is something that the God of Abraham cannot do. And the only conclusion supportable by the evidence of history is that the Quranic Allah cannot be the biblical God of Abraham. We don't deny that Allah is God. There's lots of gods out there. You know, there's Jupiter and the moon day and Thor's day, you know, Thor and the moon and the sun, Sunday, you know. Lots of gods out there. In fact, the Arabs had 360 gods in their pantheon before they adopted one god, one idol, Allah. The question that we're trying to devolve or trying to resolve here is which god is God? And the God of the Bible says, you know, if God be God, then serve God. And if Baal be God, then go serve Baal. Well, it should also be mentioned that not only can the biblical God of Abraham not be the Quranic Allah, but the resulting practice of Islam is an abomination to the God of the Bible. These are two different gods. Two different gods. The very abominable actions that the biblical God, the God of Abraham, hates are not only being practiced in Islam, but they are being done by those who claim their deity is actually the God of Abraham. Worse still, they are being practiced from the very location that the Bible tells us the God of Abraham has called his holy hill, the Temple Mount, the place where he says that he's going to rest his feet. Now, clearly the practice of Islam is an abomination before the Eternal, but worse, it is one that has been in practice for more than 1,300 years. It has now killed millions of people and affected desolation at the very heart of worship, the Temple Mount, which God himself declared was where his feet would rest forever. So we ask the following questions at the beginning of this chapter, and in consideration of the information that we have now presented, we can now answer these questions. First, is the Quranic Allah the God of Abraham? Allah in the Quran does not adhere to the same ethic as the God of Abraham portrayed in the Bible, and cannot present the ethics of the true God, assuming, of course, that the God of the Hebrew Scriptures is the true God. Note that the Muslims disagree and say they are the same, and explain the difference between the Quran accounts and the biblical accounts of the God of Abraham as being the result of biblical corruption by the Jew. Now, is Muhammad Allah's prophet? Muhammad, is that Allah's prophet? The evidence suggests that Muhammad is a prophet of Allah. However, since the Quranic Allah is a false god, Satan, Muhammad is a false prophet of the God of Abraham. 3. Is there anything idolatrous in the worship of Islam as measured against the Hebrew Bible? And the answer is, the Quran declares that Islam is against all idol worship and idolatries. However, one wonders just what they consider to be idolatry. They have built immense shrines to rocks that are considered sacred both in Mecca and Jerusalem. They claim that they do not worship the rocks, but there is no substantial difference in their worship practice involving the Kaaba after Islam than in pre-Islam when they did worship idols. Their mouths say one thing, but their actions speak louder. Jesus said, "You will know them by their fruits." A Jew just standing outside the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem and calling for peace resulted in a wave of suicide bombings in Jerusalem. Yet murdering indiscriminately, as bombs do, is evidence and viewed as a heroic act that will result in 72 virgins in sexual paradise for eternity. that implicates Allah in sin for providing the perpetual virgins in this sexual paradise, and further identifying this Islamic Allah as a God rewarding murder with sex, something that the biblical God of Abraham can never do since the Hebrew Bible calls it sin. Now, sin is the transgression of the law. That's what the God of Abraham calls it. It's in 1 John 3, verse 4. Sin is the transgression of the law. So if God transgresses the law, then he'd be a sinner, wouldn't he? Now, worse, however, is the position that allows lying on grounds of prosecuting jihad and allowing the end to justify the means. Now, the God of the Bible never allows the end to justify the means. The means that the words of Islam or Islamic leaders are patently worthless and not to be trusted. But who are these leaders? Now, recall one of the tenets of Islam, there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. We conclude then that Islam represents a false religion and one in which the values found in the Bible have been thrown to the ground amid deceptive talk. While engaging in murderous activities and advocating detestable perversions and standing on the holy hill of God is the shrine of Islam, called the Dome of the Rock, and it contains another sacred rock. The Dome of the Rock qualifies as an abomination of desolation of the highest order, and given the longevity and the location of the Dome of the Rock, it is the high place of all high places. So there's the story on Islam. Now, the Arab-Muslim invasion of Jerusalem took place in 638 of the current era when the second caliph, Omar, entered Jerusalem, reportedly on foot, in a show of respect to the city. Christians concerned for their own lives had previously drawn up the so-called Pact of Omar, which provided the conditions by which the Arabs could take control of the city and the Christians could remain alive and war could be averted. The Pact of Omar placed Christians in submission to Islam and placed such severe limits on the practice of Christianity that the Christian witness in Jerusalem was essentially dead and remained so until modern times. There have always been people that identified with Christianity in Jerusalem, but as the result of the terms of this agreement, the Pact of Omar, the Christians were required to live, to dress, and to worship under conditions of Islamic submission. In particular, Christians were not allowed to testify to their faith, evangelize people, repair their churches, engage in mission work, or even to speak to Muslims about matters of faith. The text of the Pact of Omar is contained in Appendix B. Omar cleared the Temple Mount of rubble that the Christians had placed there in order to humiliate the Jews, whom they blamed for the perversion or the Persian invasion just a few years before. It was Omar that declared that he would build a dome over the rock, believed to have been the rock that Abraham had offered sacrifice on, and which Muhammad had leaped into heaven from his flying horse during a night vision. Sophronius, the prelate of Jerusalem, who heard the declaration, proclaimed that it was the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, and many Christians ever since have made the same claim, but have never been able to prove it. The Dome of the Rock was not built at that time, however, and Omar himself was assassinated before the Dome of the Rock was built. Instead of building the Dome of the Rock immediately, the Muslims built a large wooden mosque that could hold about 3,000 people, and it became known as the Mosque of Omar. The Mosque of Omar remained for 50 years until it was in such bad need of repair that it was taken down. The Muslims then cleaned the Temple Mount of the debris between 685 and 687, and then began the construction of the Dome of the Rock. This building followed the measurements and design of the rotunda of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and was architected by the Byzantines and its craftsmen. Now, the laborers that built it included local Jews and Christians initially, although they apparently were not able to gain access to the Temple Mount during the later stages of construction. The structure was completed in 691 AD, and it acquired the name of the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock was built as an Islamic shrine and has never been a mosque, in spite of occasional reports otherwise. As a shrine, it houses the sacred rock as sacra, such or much in the same way as the shrine at Mecca houses another sacred rock, the Kaaba stone, which is considered more sacred because it fell from the sky. Originally, it was declared to be a gift from the gods. Now, the Muslims began building a new mosque on the Temple Mount, replacing the Mosque of Omar immediately after the Dome of the Rock was completed, and this new mosque, called the Al-Aqsa Mosque, was completed in 715 AD. Thus, the Dome of the Rock was the first great building erected by Islam, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the same location was completed very soon thereafter. Both buildings have been restored after long periods of dormancy and are in use today, confirming the Islamic position on the mountains of Moriah, where God said that he would remain forever with Moriah as his footstool. In Ezekiel 43, verses 6 and 7, we read that while the man was standing beside me, I heard someone speaking to me from inside the temple. He said, "Son of man, this is the place of my throne, and the place for the soles of my feet. This is where I will live among the Israelites forever." Now, we have seen that Allah in the Quran cannot be the same as the God of the Abraham or the God of Abraham in the Bible, and therefore Muhammad cannot be a prophet of the biblical God of Abraham. Muhammad is therefore a false prophet. Muslims are locked into following not just Allah but also Muhammad, a false prophet, which is why so many Westerners have referred to them as Muhammadans. Historically, Islam has required a person to submit to Islam or die. Thus, this testifies against their free will, which the God of Abraham gave to all of his creation. The result of removing free will is to enslave the people to a religious system or belief that is an appalling abomination before God because they cannot worship from the heart and can never get close to the God of Abraham. God desires that his people know the difference between right and wrong, and to choose right. Know the difference between good and evil, and then choose good. Know the difference between love and hate, and then choose love. When free will is removed, all of this becomes impossible. Followers become puppets of their leaders, not followers of God. They do not see themselves as evil because they have never known good. Nor do they recognize love, for they have only known discontent and hate. Free will is necessary to cultivate the worship that God desires, and without it, superstition and fear sets in as people become enslaved by their traditions. Islamic followers have even built shrines that house rocks regarded as sacred, and have issued threats using weapons of mass destruction should anything happen to their beloved sacred rocks. This is not new, but as Islam grows, the use of weapons of mass destruction becomes more viable. And we ask, well, where does all of this lead? And simply stated, it leads away from the God of Abraham. Now, there are about 1.3 billion Muslims in the world today that are slaves to this belief system, and their journey away from the God of Abraham is not an enviable one. Across the generations of history, these slaves have murdered their way into the history books, killing countless millions of people while spreading the faith of Islam. Yet a shrine to this religion of enslavement still exists today in Israel and is permitted to remain by the Jewish community. Why, one may reason, Why may it be that the Jews do not see the Dome of the Rock as the abomination of desolation? Very often because many believe the prophecy was fulfilled in 164 BC with Antiochus Epiphanes. So the Jews are not finding the abomination of desolation because they aren't looking for it. And because they cannot find what they do not seek, they become a victim of it. Now, many Christians, such as the prelate of Jerusalem, Sophronius, did recognize it as the abomination of desolation as it was being planned. But they moved to save their own lives using the Pact of Omar, thereby standing down rather than standing up. They sought to seek to save their own lives, and by not sounding an alarm loudly, countless millions have perished. Worse, the Christians in Judea gave up any ability of being a witness to the God of Abraham when they agreed to be subservient to Islam. Christians then put themselves first, even though they knew Islam required an unholy submission, adored rocks, excuses lying for cause, and permits deception. The Jerusalem Christians of that period also knew that Allah did not represent the biblical God of Abraham, and still took no action except to seek saving their own lives, demonstrating just how weak their commitment was to the biblical God of Abraham. Now, with both the Jewish witness and the Christian witness neutralized or dead in Judea during the Islamic occupation, the Dome of the Rock was able to survive long enough to become a tradition to Islam in its own right. And it remains so to this day. It is now considered one of the holiest artifacts in Islam, right behind the shrine of the Black Rock, Kaaba, in Mecca and Medina, which lie at the heart of Islamic worship. Another reason why the Dome of the Rock is permitted to remain in Israel today is because the Jews, seeking to save their own lives, are afraid that they would be defeated in battle by the Muslims in the war that removing that Dome of the Rock would certainly invoke. This is the same fear that Sophronius had when he made the Pact of Omar. One perspective might be that the Jews are not victims of Islam, but rather that they are victims of their own lack of trust in the biblical God of Abraham. They say that they must make peace with their enemy, but have not yet made peace with their own God. Now, God's footstool, the mountains of Moriah, remains home to the Islamic shrine that promotes the advancement of Islam, and the fact of its presence on the Temple Mount also prohibits true worship of the God of Abraham on the Holy Mountain, resulting in its desolation. Islam made the entire Holy Land desolate of the worship of the biblical God of Abraham, and on the Temple Mount it still is desolate. Our understanding of the numerical references indicated to us that the Dome of the Rock is the appalling abomination reported by Daniel in Daniel's scriptures. Even before it was built, it was identified for us. But here in the West, so little is known about Islam that it hasn't been clear how this could be true. Only upon examination of Islam and in consideration of the Islamic belief system is it clear that the structure does indeed qualify as the abomination of desolation, advancing a religious system that is an abomination before God. Even a cursory look at Islam justifies the title, the abomination of desolation. Now today, God's chosen people are in control of Israel, but they are there in unbelief, and many do not believe in God at all. And there are fewer still that know the scriptures well enough to recognize the origins of their difficulties, which is rooted in their own sin and disbelief. The result of their own sin includes the lack of recognition of, and indeed even the tolerance of, this abomination of desolation. And that disposition further testifies to the effectiveness of it. All right, now what's the conclusion of all of this? Where does this lead us? We began this investigation by examining the prophecies of the Bible concerning the abomination of desolation, and then used the numerical component as the means to determine the fulfillment. Now, when the fulfillment mysteriously coincided with the Dome of the Rock, it became necessary to review Islam to determine if that could actually be the case. Now, a cursory look at Islam led us to understand that if the Bible is believed, then Islam is false. And if the Quran is believed, then the Jews and the Christians have been grossly misguided. Now, since all people are free to believe in what they want to believe in, we used evidence based upon conclusions as a means to light the way to the truth. During the course of examination, the evidence led us to conclude that Islam does not follow the God of Abraham as expressed in the Bible, even though they claim that they do. Further, we came to realize that there are, in fact, many claims made by Islam that are not correct, not true, and they're not accurate according to the Bible and the biblical standard. And in several cases, the Islamic posture was a direct assault on the Bible and the God of Abraham cited therein, and even the Ten Commandments being violated as part of the due course of Islam. This, in turn, led to the conclusion that Allah in the Quran is not the God of Abraham as expressed in the Bible, and Muhammad is not a prophet of the God of Abraham found in the Bible. Nor could the angel Gabriel that Muhammad said that he saw in his visions be the angel that Gabriel spoken of in the Bible. Now, only God can predict the future accurately, and when we see the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, we must consider it carefully. Now, in the case of the abomination of desolation, we have demonstrated that the prophecies of the Bible have been fulfilled perfectly with the understanding that it is the Dome of the Rock, and once we realize that a day in a year is a year in prophecy, additionally, we have shown the magnitude of the abomination by explaining the nature of the religion that the Shrine of Islam represents, and the abomination is so great that it surpasses anything that has occurred in the past or will probably occur in the future within any finite period of time. Now, the God of Abraham is a merciful God and will forgive those who repent and turn their heart to Him, but the reality is that people tend to believe what they heard first, and for many Muslims, what they heard first is a non-biblical doctrine enshrouded in a religion that does not allow questioning of their prophet on penalty of death. Now, if you want to help your Muslim friends, brothers, and sisters, then pray that they can be freed from this spiritual prison of Islam in which they have entombed themselves. Our report will continue using the same day equals a year understanding, and subsequent prophetic understandings are astonishing indeed. And while we do not spend much more time in Islam, we do demonstrate that there is hope and encouragement for God's people through understanding of Bible prophecy, even in spite of the evil of this age. During the introduction to this report, we said that if you believe in the God of the Bible, then prove it by living it. Now, those words, prove it by living it, are certainly true, and this would be a good time to start. And in doing so, you will receive the blessings and the encouragement that God has for you. All right, this takes us up to the last section, frequently asked questions concerning this topic of the abomination of desolation, the Dome of the Rock, and Islamic fundamentalism. When we come back, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. The website can be accessed at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. This report, written by R. Wright, evidently was first published in 1995. It was called the Internet Report at that time. R. Wright says he has copyrighted the work. This is report number 1 of 4. And the only information that I got was that his name was R. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. I don't even know who it was that sent this in. Somebody delivered it here or sent it in. That's very common. Many people send material to me or send questions, and I put them on my pile, boys and girls. I can't get at everything instantly, and much of it isn't of the quality or the interest that I would necessarily put on the air. But occasionally, a little gem like this comes along, and I certainly appreciate whoever it was that sent this along, because I had heard about the Abomination of Desolation, and I've read that. I mentioned this earlier that I probably got, well, 5 or 6 books anyway, maybe more. I was just looking at one the other day that was written back in 1898. And the book is entitled The Abomination of Desolation. Big, thick book, 458 pages. Written in 1898 about the Abomination of Desolation. I've read those books. They make interesting reading. And, of course, lay people like myself, we read that and wonder, well, could this be true or not? You know, makes interesting reading. It sells books. Now, people have their ideas. They have their opinions. And this guy has got a little bit more than just an opinion, because the dates work out. The numbers work out. His model works out. That's the amazing part of his model. And remember, Jesus said, when you see this abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. You know, if I was living in Palestine today, I think I'd be thinking about fleeing to the mountains. Now, of course, in the course of history, these events transpire over long periods of time. And in this case, 1,290 years. So for 1,290 years, the people that worshiped the true God, that is the God of Abraham, well, that dome of the rock was there, should have fled Judea to the mountains. I think that's what that's telling us. So if I was living in Judea today, and this numbers, and if these numbers are true, accurate, and correct, then we're on the cusp of the second coming. Is that in 10, 20, or 30 years? I don't know. I've been waiting all my life for it, and I guess the Apostle Paul and everybody else has been waiting for it all of their lives. One of these days, it'll occur. Every day that goes by brings us one day closer to the inevitable second coming. All right, some frequently asked questions. We have tried to present enough information on Islam and the Dome of the Rock that a Western individual who is not necessarily familiar with Islam could realize the possibility that the Dome of the Rock, which is a shrine to Islam, is the most idolatrous high place ever built. This section addresses questions that have been submitted and will be periodically updated as more questions are asked. Readers that desire to learn more about Islam and investigate the matters further are encouraged to review the Islamic websites in the Appendix F. These websites can provide in-depth information on Islam and its history, which is far beyond the scope of this report. Now, I might mention that this report, so far as I can tell, is not in general circulation and it is not in publication. And I'm not publishing it, but there is Appendix F, the websites. I'm looking at it on page 96. And I'd say there's probably 20 up to there, yeah, 20 or 25 websites that deal with Islam. I'm not sure that I'm going to get into an in-depth study of Islam per se, but if anybody's interested, here's Appendix G on page 98, Bible Scriptural References. So he's well documented and footnoted the report. It's a very well done report. I suppose if somebody wanted a copy of this report, we should get after trying to find out where Mr. R. Wright is located. That's why in previous broadcasts I've asked that question and asked for that help. So if any of you know who this R. Wright is, where he might be located, whether or not there are any of these reports available on the internet, I'd like to read the other three reports is what I'm kind of angling for. So if any of you know R. Wright or have copies of this report or the other three reports, I've got number one here. Or if you're the guy that sent this to me, you know, somebody out there sent this to me. I didn't just dream this up. Why don't you contact me and tell me if you've got any more, or maybe you know where Mr. R. Wright is located. Over the years, I've discovered little gems of wisdom like this, and I want you to remember that in Daniel chapter 12, in fact, I think I'll just flip over to it. If you got a Bible, why don't you flip over here? You know, Daniel wanted to know what all this meant. And he asked the angel. This angel is giving him this message, and he's writing it down, saying. And so Daniel asks the question. He says, well, what's the end of all this? It's in Daniel chapter 12. Let me read it to you. And Daniel 12 is a fairly short chapter. It says, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which stands for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book of life. All right, so in verse 1 he says, now, speaking of the great tribulation, and we're talking about this thing called the abomination of desolation here, there's going to be a time of trouble. There is a time just before the second coming of the Messiah, when there's going to be a thing called Jacob's trouble or the great tribulation, as the Messiah put it in Matthew 24. He says, then shall be great tribulation such as was not from the foundation or the beginning of the world. Now, that's pretty heavy duty. Now, if you're written in the Lamb's Book of Life, you'll be delivered from it. I hope that George Gordon is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, but I don't have any knowledge of that. I don't know that. I'm working hard, and I hope that that's the case, but what if I'm not? You know, what if I'm one of those recalcitrants that just is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, then I'm going through the tribulation just like everybody else. Now, in verse 2, he says, many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt, talking about the resurrection. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But you, O Daniel, you shut up the words and sealed the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. So when Daniel wrote this book, you know, around 570, 580 BC, 560 maybe, I don't know exactly when he wrote it, but it was in the, you know, 5th century BC. The angel told him to close up this book to the time of the end. Now, boys and girls, if you and I are living in the time of the end, this is the time when many are running to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Well, we're living in the time of enlightenment. Over the last 200 years, you've noticed that there's been a tremendous increase in knowledge and scientific development. And many are running to and fro. There's never been a time that I know of in world history when there has been as much travel by as many people as there are today. So that prophecy in verse 4 has come to pass. It's being revealed. It's coming to pass every day. Just go outside and look out. Pay attention. In verse 5 he says, "Then I, Daniel, looked, and I beheld, there stood another two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on the side of the bank of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen which was upon the waters of the river, 'How long will it be to the end of these wonders?' And I heard the man clothed in linen which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that lives forever that it shall be for a time, times, and a half of time. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. And I heard, but I understood not, and then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end.'" So this prophecy, called the abomination of desolation, could not be understood till the time of the end. And somebody had to come along and reveal it. Now, I didn't figure this out. I'm not that smart. I'm kind of like old Thomas Edison. Edison had over 1,200 patents, had a third-grade education. Edison had something going for him that most people have never even dreamed of. Now listen to this. Let me give you a couple of illustrations. Edison invented the light bulb and he invented the motion picture camera. Both of those inventions were ideas of other men. Edison did not wake up in the middle of the night and say, "Oh my God, I've got to pass electricity through a filament and cause light." Somebody else thought that out. Edison paid a guy named Johnson $100 for that invention, or the work on that invention. Johnson had the idea, but he could never figure out what kind of a filament would go into this vacuum tube with the electricity going through it that would produce light. They could get a brilliant flash, but they couldn't get it sustained. It's the sustained burning of the filament without burning it up. Kind of like the sun, you know, it continually burns, but it doesn't burn up. Where it burns up very slowly. Your light bulb burns out, but very slowly. Edison was a genius. He took other men's ideas and then perfected them. The motion picture camera was the same thing. There was a system that had been developed where you took a lot of still pictures and put them together on a wheel and then spun the wheel and you could see a motion picture. In other words, each move of the still being moved just a little bit would produce the effect of motion pictures. When Edison saw that, he said, "Wow, if I could put that on film." Now, cameras were out there. So he said, "Well, can I get film that would take pictures? Could I come up with this process whereby I could develop a camera that would click a picture as people were moving?" So the idea was somebody else's. Edison. The genius of Edison was in taking somebody's idea and then perfecting it and making it commercially viable. He was a businessman. Edison was the consummate entrepreneur. 1,200 patents, third grade education. A genius. If the word genius can be applied to anybody, it has to be applied to Edison. Now, the angel tells Daniel here in verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So now, if you want to understand this prophecy, then, he says, the wicked are not going to understand it, but the wise can understand it. Those that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life at the end of the age, those that are righteous, those that obey God and keep His commandments can understand it. Now, that's quite a story. Quite a story. Verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is that is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. But go your way till the end be, for you shall rest and stand in your lot at the end of the day. So it says, Daniel, you write this down. But Danny, you're not going to understand it. And I'm not going to explain it to you. Daniel is dead and buried and in his grave today and will not understand this prophecy until the resurrection. And they'll say, oh, now I understand. The angel told him, he said, go your way. Close it up and seal it to the time of the end. Well, it's my contention that we're at the time of the end. And there isn't 1,290 years left. I don't believe for a minute that with nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction out there, that you're going to be able to keep this genie locked up in the box forever. For instance, the Muslims in Pakistan already have the bomb. They've already got nuclear weapons. And they have tried to share those nuclear weapons with others. And you might stop the Iranians from getting nuclear weapons in 2005, but you know, 2010, 20, 30, 40, you know. They'll just keep after it. One of these days, the North Koreans or the Russians or somebody is going to give a nuclear weapon or the technology to some Arab somewhere. And remember, these people now are pretty fanatical. People that strap bombs on their bodies and go blow themselves up so that they can go to heaven. Now, we're pretty serious people, aren't they? You saw that over in London with those bombings over there in their subway system. You know, these are pretty serious players. And this is a thing that comes from God Himself. He says, I will make your enemies to be at peace with you. You know, these Muslims have been around here, you know, for 1,500 years. And God has made them, for the most part, to be at peace with us. We haven't had any problems, you know, with the Muslims until we started bringing 7 million of them over here to the United States. And that's what you people in England have done. You know, you brought all those Muslims from Pakistan and India and around the world from your colonies over to England. And now you've got these Trojan horses behind your lines. No, they don't have this problem in Sweden. They don't have it in Finland and Norway and Denmark. But where you produce racial integration, where you try to bring America, for instance, into the place of the melting pot of the world. I was down in Dallas not too long ago, and there was a fair down there at the fairgrounds in Dallas, and they had all the cultures of that live around Dallas had a booth, and they had their representations, and I think they had around 150 of them there. I was absolutely amazed. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. I mean, they had people from Pakistan, and there'd be these Pakistanis, and there'd be 6, 8, 10 of them, you know, behind the booth there at the Pakistani exhibit. And they were showing off Pakistan and their culture and what they were doing. Then they had Mexico, and then there were some Mexicans there, and they were showing off Mexico, and then there was Guatemala and El Salvador, and I mean, you know, every country in the world. And here's the surprising part. See, you've got communities of people. You've got Vietnamese communities here in the United States. I don't know how many Vietnamese there are, but I'll bet there's a million of them over here or more. And then you've got Indonesians, and I'll bet you that there's a million Indonesians and a million Pakistanis and, you know, a million Indians and a million of this and that. You know, and you take, maybe not a million of every one of them, but, you know, you take 100,000, 10,000, 50,000. You get all these cultures of people over here. And these people come over here with their religions and with their gods, with their politics, with their customs. And there's inevitably going to be a clash of customs, a clash of ethnic ideologies. And that's why God separated us at the Tower of Babel, and that's why he originated this statutory provision called segregation. We used to practice in this country segregation. Somebody woke up one day and said, my God, segregation is discrimination. Now, discrimination is against the law. Discrimination in the scripture is called the oppression of a stranger within your gates. That's against the law, but segregation isn't and never was. And bringing all those people over here, you know, was a mistake. There wasn't any need for it. And I don't blame the Pakistanis for wanting to come to the United States. I mean, Islam and Pakistan. Just take a look at every Islamic country in the world. They're poor. Even the Saudi Arabians are poor. There is a wealthy elite in Saudi Arabia that are filthy rich, and the rest of the people are just flat-ass broke, poor. Take a look at all of the Muslim countries. Take a look at all of these pagan nations around the world and then ask yourself, which one of them would you like to emigrate to? If Indian religion is so good, how come you don't just move to India where you can get right into it up to your elbows and wallow in it? You ever think about that? Now, the Indians over there, they can see what filth and perversity that they're living in, and they want to get the hell out. So they want to come to the United States or Canada or Western Europe. And you can't blame them. I mean, if I lived in that kind of squalor and filth and depravity and tyranny, I'd want to get out too. But when they get out, what do they do? Do they leave Islam behind them? No, they bring it with them to the United States and Canada, to England. And they've got a modus operandi, and they've got an agenda. They've got their jihad, and they want to spread Islam. The thing that causes their poverty, the thing that causes the filth, the depravity, the poverty, and so on, is their religion. And God told them that. The Creator, the God of Abraham, said, you practice my law, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob. And we Americans and Britons and Canadians and Australians, New Zealanders, Western Europeans, have been the recipients of those blessings, which are, by the way, being taken away from us. Daniel over here in Daniel 12 tells you that story. Now, this 3.5 years, times and a half a time, if you take that 360, you know, times 3, that gives you 1080 and a half a time. So if you get 1080 and 180, you get 1260. 1260 days. And then you notice in the book of Revelation it talks about a time and a half a time. You got 1260 years, 1260 days. I don't pretend to know what all that means. I'm just here to report to you that you get 1260 days, 1290 days, 1,335 days. And I would suspect that this guy R. Wright here probably has put a pretty good story together in these other three reports, which is why I'm pretty interested in reading some more. I would like to find out what more does this guy know. He has certainly put a different light on this concept of the abomination of desolation. All right, next time we'll take up some frequently asked questions that come up in this thing of the abomination of desolation. And I'll give you a couple, three of them right here. He says, do Muslims know the Dome of the Rock is, in fact, the abomination of desolation? And the right answer is, well, usually not. Most Muslims do not actively read the Hebrew Bible, although they claim to accept it, but only in a modified form. As a result, only a few have heard of the abomination of desolation, and those who have heard of it believe that it is a reference to the rise of Zionism. Muslims that are familiar with the abomination of desolation scriptures are aware that some Christians through the ages have believed that it is the Dome of the Rock and are concerned about this.
Now, what are the forces of Islam attempting to accomplish, or what is it that the forces of Islam are attempting to accomplish? And the answer is they're attempting to accomplish world domination, submission to Islam, and the destruction of the Jews. They want to destroy Israel and Judah, the Jews. And they want to dominate the world. Now, there's a billion of them out there. You know, the communists wanted to do the same thing. The communists have a very similar modus operandi. The communism is satanic, and this Islamic religion is satanic. And if you'll remember, God said that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. This is Satan's world. Satan took Jesus, the Messiah, up on the pinnacle of the temple, took him up on a mountain first, and he said, "Now see all these kingdoms out here. I'll give all these to you. All these kingdoms, the United States and Great Britain and Australia and Russia and Saudi Arabia, these are the kingdoms of the world. These are the kingdoms of Satan." And if you pay attention here in Daniel 12, he says, "Those that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life." There's a small minority of people. There's a small group of people somewhere on planet Earth. The prophet Elijah made that same observation. It's recorded in 1 Kings chapter 17 or 18. He said, "I'm the last guy in Israel to practice this law." Now, Big Mike said, "No, that's not true. It's true that you're in a minority, but I have reserved 7,000 in Israel that have not bowed their knee to Baal." Throughout history, there have been a few, not many, but a few, who obey God and keep His commandments. They're rare. And Jesus called them the salt of the earth. Matthew and the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 over there called them the salt of the earth, the meek, who will inherit the earth. Now, most Christians, most religious people, they want to go to heaven. See, when they die, they go to heaven. Jesus said the meek will inherit the earth. So the last thing you Christians want to do is to be meek. You want to be arrogant and strut around like a Nazi. That way, you can go to heaven. Otherwise, you'll be left down here if you're meek to inherit the earth. Is that what they mean by being left behind? Well, tuck that one away in your heart. What relationships are permitted with Jews and Christians? Do Muslims have relationships with Jews and Christians? None. None. Zero. The Quran states that it is not permitted to have a Jew or a Christian as a friend. It says, "Take neither the Jews nor the Christians for your friends. They are friends with one another. Whoever of you seeks their friendship shall become one of their number." Quran 551, called the table. In Islam, Jews are lower than Christians because they rejected Jesus as the Messiah. Christians are lower than Muslims because, although they understand Jesus was sent by God as the Messiah, they deified Jesus, making it necessary for God to send a new prophet, Muhammad, who holds the position as the greatest of all the prophets. A common theme in the Quran is believers obey Allah and obey the Apostle. It is on this basis that the hadiths carry so much weight, since they contain the words of Muhammad, who, according to himself, is the most important man that has ever lived. Isn't that amazing? Well, we'll take a look at some more of this. Frequently asked questions in the abomination of desolation when we come back in the last program in the series. And that'll be tomorrow night. Meanwhile, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, economics, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.